And I have a very special guest here by the name of Carl Cady. And let me just tell you a little bit about Carl, and then we're going to have a nice conversation here. Carl Cady is the author of two poetry collections, Revenge of Nature and The Burning House. Today, we're discussing his latest work, The Adventures of Cabeza de Vaca, a fictional depiction of the life of a Spanish conquistador. Carl's work focuses on life-changing experiences and has been published in Poetry Catalog, the Santa Clara Review, Poetry X Hunger, the Sailor's Review, Poetry Inc. Anthology, New Verse News, and multiple Redwood Writers anthologies. He lives and writes in Santa Rosa, California. Welcome, Carl.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. And, for the listening audience, I had a pleasure of working with Carl from a marketing capacity with helping him out with some of the positioning for this book. And it's a short read. It reads like it's poetic, but it's also poetic prose, and it's an adventure story. So let's just tell the listeners about this book, because your writing is so tight. It's the metaphors in there, as I mentioned to you in person, are just phenomenal. So I want people to hear it from you, not from me, Carl. So tell them a little bit about what the book is and how you came to want to write this book.
Okay. Well, The Adventures of Cabeza de Vaca is about a 16th century Spanish conquistador, Alvar Nunez Cabeza de Vaca. He became lost in the United States in 1527, and he remained lost for nearly 10 years, long before it was settled by Europeans. This experience changed him profoundly, and he accomplished a lot, but his legacy was undermined because when he returned to Spain, he had neither gold and silver nor territory for the New World. And on top of that, he went on to challenge colonization and to advocate for Indian rights. But over time, his accomplishments as an explorer have grown. And in terms of being recognized. And I structured the book as a series of fictional vignettes centered on the seven key incidents that transformed Cabeza de Vaca. Each vignette is accompanied by an original illustration that is historically accurate, and my goal has been to make his history come alive.
And let me just pause there for a sec, because
Sure.
the structure and these short vignettes, they read like they're little mini adventure stories. But I want to come back to something that struck me, because when I initially read the book, I didn't understand that this was about advocating for Native American rights. And I do want you to explore that a little bit. We haven't had anybody talk about that on this show, and I think that it's really an important element of the story, going back to the Columbus days, when this Spain sent Columbus over here to conquer the quote unquote New World, and he came back with whatever he came back with. This guy came back empty-handed and no territory. But talk about his advocacy for the Native Americans. What was that conversation from some of your research, and how does it unfold within the book?
Well, it's quite interesting. Cabeza de Vaca, because he became lost among the Indians, he had to become an Indian to survive. So he basically transformed himself from a Spanish noble conquistador to an Indian, and then back to a conquistador again. But he didn't return to the fold unscathed. He basically was completely transformed. And when he got back to Spain, he wrote an account about this, which was his, because he didn't have anything to bring, he was empty-handed, as you said, he wrote an account of his journey and gave that to the crown. And it turned out to be sort of a minor bestseller. It's called La Relación. And in that, he wrote all about the what life was like for him and his adventures. But now back to your question about Indian rights. Ever after he went back to Spain, he campaigned over and over to get another assignment in the Americas. And finally, he was appointed as governor of the southern half of South America. And when he went there, there were already a lot of Spanish nobles there. But they and they he immediately abolished slavery of the Indians. He made it illegal to enter their property without their permission. And he also got rid of any kind of demands for tribute. Well, the Spanish nobles who were there were very upset by this. And it was not well accepted because
Understandably
they
so. The same thing happened in our country, right? When you had the North and the
Yes.
South and the Revolutionary War, and people who were slave owners predominantly in the southern states, if you will, they were like, no, we don't want to let go of our slaves. Okay, continue.
So that's an example of what he did. And then when he went back to Spain, he was the nobles arranged for him to be arrested. They said that he had violated Indian rights, which he hadn't. And so he was imprisoned, and then he was sent back to Spain to to be tried again, and he was. And he was convicted, and he was sent off to Algeria to serve a sentence, but he appealed and he won. And so in the end, he was able to return to Spanish life, but his messages about Indian rights were not really taken that seriously for a while, and for a long time. But over time, that they have been, and his story is sort of the testament to that.
Well, and this is interesting. I mean, I'd love to see you turn this into a full-length novel at some point too, rather than just vignettes, because that there's I, it reminds me of a story that I read, and I don't remember the name, but it was about the Yanomamo people in the Brazilian rainforest who were basically completely isolated from Western civilization. And I remember reading it in college in an anthropology class, and I was just fascinated. Similar story, this gentleman befriended them and became acclimated. He knew of these people. His purpose was as an explorer to go meet them. And he did whatever he could to become acclimated in the tribe. And he wrote extensively about those experiences, including some of the psychedelic experiences that he had. I believe it was ayahuasca or something like that that he was doing at the time to come in touch with his spirit animal. But what else can you tell us that may or may not be in the book about his journey or his experience living with Native Americans? Because that's a story that could be fill a full volume, I'm sure.
Well, his experience living with the Indians, it's interesting because in his account that he wrote, usually when the conquistadors like Pizarro and Cortez went back to Spain and they gave their accounts, it was just about their military adventures, how they'd conquered the territories, what they had returned with. But he wrote about his actual adventures. And as part of that, he talked about what they ate, how they lived, how they worshiped, how they traded. And also his own experience was he had to survive. He was not accepted as an Indian. He was sort of an outcast among the Indians. And when he and but he had to show his worth. So he had to prove himself in the Indian culture. And as part of that, he so
And
he
tell us a little bit more about that just from your research, because I don't think it comes out in the book, but what did that look like in terms of proving his worth, hunting and just for example?
Well, one of the well the section I'm going to read today actually goes into that in some to some extent, but the Indians all of a sudden had these people on their hands that were sick, not well. And they nursed them back to health, and they said, "Well, what are you going to do for us?" And in many cases, they tried to enslave them, and treat them as just chattel to be used, and so. In order to survive and thrive, Cabeça de Vaca figured out ways to kind of distinguish himself and become a success among the Indians. So, one example is, and I'll go into this in some depth in when I read, but he had to reinvent himself as an Indian faith healer. Then later on, he was in a situation where he was getting pretty much he was headed towards an early death because he was working in the reeds on the coast, basically doing slave work. And he figured out that the tribe he was part of at that point could not get things they needed in land. And so he proposed that he become a trader. He said, "Well, I can get those things for you." And so he became a trader between different Indian tribes, which gave him independence and among the Indians, wealth and prestige.
Interesting. So this
There's
is
a
a
couple examples.
well, it's interesting to see to hear the adaptability of him being in an adverse situation and just learning to adapt to his environment for survival. I mean, survival is a great motivator of most people. When you're faced with your back up against the wall, you figure it out or you die. I mean, that's kind of it's this or that. So is now a good time to jump in to do the reading? Because that was one of the things that I really wanted you to do, and I think you just set it up a little bit here. Let's jump into that reading if you're prepared to do that now.
Sure. This is the third section in the book.
And
It's
go ahead,
called
Carl,
To.
go ahead and show the cover of the book because this will be
Sure.
on YouTube as well so people can see
This
it.
is the third
Okay.
section of the book.
Okay.
And I'll show you the actual illustration that accompanies the story. The illustration. And there's something like this for everyone of the tales. But to give you the back story on this, Cabeza de Vaca and his remaining crew, were with a group of Indians called the Mojada. And he was with them, and they basically were demanding that he show his value. And as part of that, he had learned their language. He'd become very proficient. He turned out to be a natural polyglot. And this is told from his point of view. To become a healer. When the Mojado rescue us, we are as weak as scurvied sailors. The Indians care for us, share food and shelter. When we recover, the chief tells us, "You eat our food and sleep in our tents, but you're useless." He demands we become healers. Blow on the wounds. Lay hands on them. I scoff. Complain that we are not doctors and not this is not medically sound. The chief stomps out, raising his bow and arrow to shoot a squirrel. It drops from the cypress as if struck by God. After that, the tribe withholds our meals. Each day grows more dire. As if our collective canoe has been cast adrift into a sea of starvation. As my dark heart cries to return to Spain, my heart of life, a blight, saves me from free fall. I must consider my crew and our survival. If we practice Indian shamanism, we lose our souls. If we don't perform their ritual, we starve. I retreat to the edge of camp to weigh our options. Animal cries and the rush of night wind are as loud as armies in battle. So loud, I heard nothing from the camp. Before long, though, I smelled the aroma of frying meat, compelling me to save myself by eating the dead, God's lower creatures. How did I not see it? The wilderness is as hungry as I am. Striving to endure has kept us alive, but it hasn't kept us safe. How much do I risk by Indian faith healing? The next day, I entered the camp. The next day, I entered the tent of a hot, sweating man who clutches his stomach and spits words like musket bullets. Unable to distinguish feverish gibberish from language beyond knowing, I put my hands on his chest and blow, saying, "Bless you, my son." Then I recite the Lord's Prayer, followed by an Ave Maria. I pray for him to live so that Christians do not die. I pray for permission to plant seeds of faith. Heal this man so that he can become Christian. The following morning, he strides out and proclaims himself well. He rewards me with an animal blanket, precious shells, and a red cedar bow, better than anything I own. 2 days later, I wake to a crackling fire, roasting rabbit. Men in deerskin loincloths and women in moss skirts curve around my tent like hands in prayer. Is this land of want also a land of becoming? Has God let me live so that I can imagine more?
Carl, I thank you for reading that. It harkens, and I told you this when we were working together too. There's certain elements in there that are even deeper because of the visual and the sensory language that you have. But it reminds me so much of Viktor Frankl's story. And I know this is a tall order to even compare you to Man's Search for Meaning, but that kind of detail and bringing it down to the survival mechanism. And that's why I really wanted you on this show because, folks, the writing is tight. It's super, super concise. The stories are impactful. Carl's got a knack for cutting out all of the fluff and getting to the metaphors that mean something. So hopefully, you heard a taste of what this book is. And what I'd like now, Carl, is to just transition into a little bit on self-promotion, talking about who you wrote this book for, who might benefit from it, and also where the heck they can get it, because I think that is really important. This is one of those books that I think could be part of a historical any type of education system, really, whether it's collegiate, junior high, and or high school that are doing social studies courses. It's short, it's simple, it's not offensive, it's not overtly religious in any form or fashion. It's talking about a historical relevant character that most people don't know about. So the mic is yours.
Okay. Well, I guess in terms of who the book is for, I think a lot of people would be interested in this because it's an adventure story. And it's an adventure story that I think has relevance today. Given the turmoil in culture, business, and government today, I thought this is a story that needs to be told now because it's how one man struggles against incredible challenges, survives to make a difference, and how that difference still continues to have resilience hundreds of years later. And I think we can learn from that. So from that point of view, I think it has a lot of relevance. I think from an education standpoint, I tried to write what I tried to do with this book is write it so that it relates to the human side. When I read all the historical things, because I did a lot of research for this, I looked at all the historical facts. I first learned about it from Rebecca Solnit, who's a San Francisco writer, and she wrote a short few paragraphs about him in a book she called A Field Guide to Getting Lost. And after I read that, I had to find out everything I could about him and researched him. And when I did, I realized a lot of the writing was flat. It didn't have, it was, and when I read his own account, it was sort of unemotional and it relayed what went on, but without any kind of oomph to it. So I made it my
Almost
mission
like a
to bring
ship's
his
log.
story to life.
Almost like a ship log where you're just making journal entries about what's happening for the day, the weather, the
In
tides.
fact, that's what his compatriots, Pizarro and Cortez did. They basically just returned with a ship's log, but he didn't have anything to offer, so he turned his ship's log into his book. And then I took it to another level because I wanted everyone from a from an eighth grader to an 80-year-old to know who Cabeza de Vaca is and what he did. And I think it's I wanted to make the story accessible to all generations. So I think it has historical currency, you know, for education because of that. Because in a lot of ways, it's hard for people just to pick up a history book and jump right in.
Yeah, and that's what makes history so fun and exciting. I mean, you look at the success going way back to the Indiana Jones stories. I mean, he was an archaeologist, and they took something that could be very boring, sitting there brushing away debris and sifting through, you know, rocks for hours and hours on end, and they turned it into an adventure story. And people love adventure. What I love that you did with this is by being historical fiction, you don't have to be 100% accurate to the account. So it gives you the creative license to take the facts and bring them to life. And that's an art in and of itself, Carl. But let's stay on the track of how this could
How
benefit
this could benefit
educators and
educators.
others.
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at it educationally, there also is Cabeza de Vaca didn't just have this heroic study. Heroic story behind him. He also accomplished a great deal. He was the first European to live with the Indians for an extended period of time. And he lived with different tribes from Florida to Texas, all across the southern United States, and also in northern Mexico. He was the first European to walk across North America, traveling from Tampa, Florida to the Sea of Cortez or the Gulf of Mexico, and then went all the way back to Mexico City. He
What?
was, yeah, he was the first.
On foot? Well, maybe horseback too, but mostly on foot.
No, there was no horses,
It
you
was
know,
all foot.
and the horses that they brought with him on the original journey, they ended up eating because they ran out of food. His account of the journey is also the first known depiction of life in pre-European America. And he learned the Indian languages, became fully integrated. So he not only tells their story, but what they ate, how they lived, how they traded, how they worshiped. And it's often cited by anthropologists as evidence of what life was like at that time. And finally, he was the first conquistador to advocate for Indian rights and put them into law, which as I mentioned earlier, got him into a lot of trouble. But he may have succeeded in the end over centuries because Spain was the first imperial power to abolish slavery. So that's from an educational standpoint. From historical fiction, I hope that it really brings this history alive for people, and it's very readable. Because it is kind of an adventure story. And what I've tried to do with the book is make it more accessible by including the illustrations. So each of the seven incidents, transformative incidents in his life, is fully illustrated by a San Francisco artist, Shirley Smith, who used watercolor pencils to do these specially historically accurate pictures.
No, it's just it's so there's something about it. And folks, you know, where do they get it, Carl? Is it I know you have did you put it on consignment at Copperfields and they can get it on Amazon,
Well,
right?
you can get it. You know, it isn't yet, but I think it will be on consignment at Copperfields. But they can get it from Amazon. They can order it from any bookstore, including Copperfields, and they can get it. It's available that way. And so I'm at the early stages of the actual distribution at this point. But it is available right now through Amazon and from ordering from your bookstores.
Well, this is I look forward to assisting you as you move forward with this journey and just being a sounding board for you because you introduced me to something that I hadn't really paid attention to. It brings me back to even the high school Spanish classes where they introduced some of the cultural aspects, not just the language aspect of learning Spanish. And that's one of the things that it stuck with me to this day of learning the culture and the various idioms and the idiosyncrasies between Castilian Spanish and Spanish as it's spoken throughout most of Mexico. But the culture is what always got me, and the culture is the stickiness. And there's one other thing that you just talked about. And listeners, I don't want you to miss this. What Carl's done in this very terse and tight volume is tell much more than an adventure story, as he alluded to. It's an exercise in humility. It's an exercise in sociology. It's an exercise in communication of being able to relate to people who you don't know and you do not have a plan. You are just going across the country one way and back the other. And this guy, Cabeza de Vaca, did that and lived to tell the story. And there's a lot to be said about that. I don't want to unpack it all here because maybe you'll write another book down the road, but my goodness, think about that. Some of us have a hard time talking to our neighbors or engaging on social media, let alone multiple different Indian tribes from coast to coast in the United States and the Americas. So, wow. What else do you want to add, Carl?
Well, when you talk about learning Spanish, I think it's interesting because I tried to depict him from his own point of view in his own culture, but he had to really break through his own culture to live with the Indians. And as part of that, he learned about three or four different Indian languages. He was fluent in multiple Indian languages. That was a big part of it, is to become part of the culture because he had to. He had to learn the languages and their cultures. But that wasn't enough for him. He insisted on becoming a success as well. So he became a successful Indian as part of that.
But that's also an inner drive. I mean, we don't know who he was in, outside of what he's shared that you were able to find historically, but that's kind of an inner drive thing where you really want to learn to be acclimated and assimilated into a various a particular culture or an environment. And it's indicative of what happens often in various cultures and groups, i.e. the Writers Club that you and I are a part of. That's where we initially met. In work environments, there's a language that is still maybe English in the United States, but there's jargon that is applicable to that particular industry that people need to learn. And in order to communicate properly, we need to understand the lingo. And
You do.
what you're talking about here is the lingo for life.
And when you talk about the language as well, his origins are always kind of curious because people who know Spanish look at his name and they say, Cabeza de Vaca. That means head of cow. And the story about that is he had a title, head of cow, which was a title of nobility because his ancestor had actually been instrumental in helping the Spanish win against the Moors. And he did that by showing them an unknown pass across the mountains that allowed them to attack the Moors, which is the turning point in the war. And he did that by leaving the skull of a cow on the trail to mark where the path was. And that's how he got the title. But then he'd been resting on that title for generations. He was a member of the Spanish nobility. He was rich. He had a hacienda. But as a noble, you have to have your job. And his job became becoming an explorer and a conquistador.
What a great story. So what else do you want to add? We're going to wrap here in just in a minute or two. Again, the book is, what's the title of the book again, one more time?
Title of the book is The Adventures of Cabeza de Vaca. And one thing I should note is that When you search for it on Amazon, look under my name first, Carl Kadie, Karlkadie, because that there's other historical pieces about Cabeza de Vaca. So this will allow them to find the book that I wrote.
I'm
And
glad
it's available
you
both in paperback and in Kindle form.
Perfect. And I'm glad you made that distinction because when we started working together, I had a hard time finding it. There is a larger volume there. But that's the beauty of having your name attached to a title is when you search Carl with the Karl Katie, Kadie, and then Cabeza de Vaca, you should find the book. And Carl, this has been a true delight. All the success in the world to you as you roll this out and you get more opportunities to present the book to various audiences throughout Sonoma County and wherever else you land. How do people get a hold of you if they want you to come talk to a school or anything in the education arena if that's an option for you?
Well, they can certainly contact me by email, or they can. I do have a site, a blog site, a blog spot. They can contact as well.
Okay, do you feel comfortable sharing your email here? Should they find it through your website or what's the best way?
Well, my web, my blog spot is. It's basically Carl Katie Blogspot is where you
Got
can
it.
find me. My email is kkadie at gmail.com.
Perfect, Carl. This has been Dare to Be Great, Dare to Be You. My name is Sean Langwell. I am your host. We've been visiting with Carl Katie, who is the author of multiple books, poetry in particular, and the most recent one, which is Cabeza de Vaca, an adventure story of a Spanish conquistador who acclimated himself in the Americas with various Indian tribes. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful, tight story of seven vignettes. Carl, this has been a delight, and I'm so glad that you've been my guest on the show.
John, thank you so much for having me and for allowing me to share this story about one person in history who dared to be great.
You nailed it. That's why we had you on the show. On that, folks, tune in next time. If you like the show, follow it, share it, put it out there, and this will be out in a couple weeks. And once again, my name is Sean Langwell, and I'm the host of Dare to Be You, Dare to Be Great. Thank you.